What a gorgeous day. Hope you had a great weekend. I know I did, and already it has been a busy news day. Of course, it is the first Monday of October, the day when the Supreme Court begins its new term. Could it possibly be as consequential as the previous year with rulings on abortion, the extension of gun rights, your ability to carry outside the home, the limitations on the administrative state? It was quite something. And already today, the term just a few hours old, they've made some big decisions on what cases they will take up, in which cases they won't. What can we expect over the next few months? We turn to Zach Smith, legal fellow in the Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Conservative Heritage Foundation. Zach, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me on.
I don't know that I've ever seen a Monday in the first term as full of breaking news as this has been. Let's kind of take that first. They will take up a case to determine the level of immunity that social media and tech platforms have, the so-called Section 230, that they may be able to be sued for the harm of their content. How far-reaching could this be?
Well, this is obviously a very controversial issue. It's something I'm sure every big tech company is going to be paying attention to very closely. And it certainly just adds to what I think is shaping up to be another very big term. I mean, look, I feel like I'm saying that more and more often with the Supreme Court these days. You know, obviously, last term was very monumental with the Dobbs decision, which overturned Roe versus Wade and other very important decisions as well. But look, we have many, many important decisions the court is going to hear this term as well. Not only are they going to hear these Section 230 cases that you just mentioned, there's also another case they agreed to hear involving attorney-client privilege, what happens when you receive a grand jury subpoena. And then in terms of arguments today, they are getting started very hot as well. In fact, this morning they heard an important administrative law case, Sackett versus EPA. They're hearing an important election law-related case tomorrow, Merrill versus Milligan. And then, of course, at the end of October, they're going to hear two very closely watched cases, the Harvard and UNC cases, where they're essentially being asked to decide whether universities can continue to engage in affirmative action type programs that essentially discriminate on the basis of race.
I thought the Bollinger case kind of decided that, Zach. I mean, and I think even Justice Ginsburg at once said that, yeah, we're pretty done with this. This is pretty much settled law. What's new? Because some of these precedents are over 40 years old.
Well, it's really interesting, actually, Guy. You know, the Gratz and Grutter cases, they allowed this affirmative action type programs to remain in place. There were certain parameters that had to be in place. They were supposed to be kind of very narrow programs. And Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who actually wrote some of those decisions, she said, look, we expect these types of affirmative action programs to eventually expire by their own terms within 25 years or so. Now, this was in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. We're not quite at 25 years yet, but we're very, very close. And I have a strong suspicion, you know, I'm hesitant to read the tea leaves too often here, but I have a strong suspicion that the court would not have taken these cases unless they were interested in potentially overruling those previous precedents.
Right, and making some changes. Today, or as you said, Tuesday, I guess, the justices will hear this Milligan case
that
really kind of asks the question about how much race should enter into the redrawing of election boundaries. This is out of Alabama, where there are claims that redistricting has really diluted black representation. Those are complaints we've heard in Michigan, too. Give us kind of the lowdown on those cases.
Yeah, this is actually a very interesting case. It involves Alabama's redistricting of their congressional seats. Alabama has seven congressmen and women, seven congressional seats. And, you know, every 10 years, they draw new congressional maps. They've essentially had the same maps since the early 90s. There's a lot of litigation at that time. And the state legislature essentially created one majority-minority district. It has a majority of black voters in this district. And what's important to keep in mind, Alabama essentially adopted the same map with minor changes after the 2000 census adopted the same map after in 2010 after that census, and both of these maps were approved by the Department of Justice at those times. And in 2010, that was obviously the Obama Department of Justice, that these maps were fine, they didn't discriminate, anything like that. Well, what happened after the 2020 census, Alabama again essentially redrew those same maps, except this time a set of private plaintiffs challenged the maps, and a lower court basically said Alabama now has to draw two majority-minority districts instead of just one. That unless they drew two districts, it would violate Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which basically says, you know, states aren't supposed to discriminate against voters based on race, color, religion, a whole host of things.
Right, like but doesn't it also say that your minority representation does not have to equal the share of the population that those minorities represent, right? I mean, that's kind of a key thing, too. Well, but that seems to be the outcome they're seeking.
It absolutely is. And look, Alabama, they are arguing very forcefully at the court that as applied, as the lower court applied the Voting Rights Act, it would essentially violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment because it would force state legislators to essentially consider racial factors to the exclusion of almost every other factor.
Right.
Factors like communities of interest, factors like historical lines, you know, these other factors that are traditionally used in the redistricting process. And so I suspect when this Merrill versus Milligan case is argued tomorrow, we're going to hear a lot of talk about, you know, whether or not Section 2, as applied in this case, violates the 14th Amendment, what types of factors state legislators should consider when drawing maps. And this case, however it's decided, will have very, very important implications for the redistricting process going forward.
And something we just went through, and as I hear, we're hearing the same complaints here. We also have a piece of breaking news that the Supreme Court will not take up a case to determine the vaccine mandate decision. It affects 10.3 million Americans. This was a Biden mandate that affected healthcare workers. Many felt it was a real infringement on states' rights and an executive overreach. Why wouldn't that qualify for a Supreme Court attention?
Well, it's a great question. You know, one of the things that's happening right now, you know, the court has been on an informal hiatus for most of the summer. Most of the summer, you know, cases come in, the justices take some time off, you know, they're still hearing emergency motions. But essentially, right before the court comes back and begins its new term, they hold something called the Long Conference. They review all the cases that have been pending since they essentially ended their last term in June. And there's hundreds and hundreds of cases they consider. And so what happens a lot of time is the court takes a number of cases out of the Long Conference. There are nine that were granted today that they've agreed to hear. But there are hundreds and hundreds of other cases that they do not take. They don't tell us why they don't take these cases. You know, some of them, I think, are unfortunate that they don't take.
Yeah.
But it's a very interesting process to watch play out in real time here.
Well, and of course, we've got a supermajority, a 6-3 conservative supermajority. And it's interesting that the court as an institution now is under assault. It's being characterized as illegitimate. Now, when it leaned left, and then there was a lot of caterwauling then from conservatives and from the right, plenty of criticism, but I don't recall any of them ever calling the court illegitimate. Or am I just misremembering?
No, I don't think you're misremembering. You know, it's not fake news, nothing like that. But look, you know, this is something that's very unfortunate. We've seen attempts by those on the left really trying to politicize the court. You know, we've seen threats by Chuck Schumer and others to pack the court, add justices in an attempt to get, you know, their own preferred political outcomes. We've seen the justices, you know, really being intimidated in many ways, protest night after night after night in front of their homes time and again. And so this has been really an unfortunate development.
Yeah.
You know, people are free to criticize the court. They're free to disagree with the court. But to say the court is illegitimate because you may not agree with the decisions that it issues, that is something that is very troubling.
Well, you're undermining an institution. There's a lot of that going on from both sides. But in this case, it certainly seems like they're running a double standard here. Zach, we know you're going to be on hand to help explain all of this to us when it happens. And we look forward
Absolutely.
To that.
Thank you so much. Take
All
care.
Right. Zach Smith with the Heritage Foundation. You got some thoughts? 1-800-859-0957. But when we come back, Boy, did they blow that forecast. Some looking back at Hurricane Ian's forecast and why so many people might have ignored it and why it may have cost lives. That's next.